That's the formula, baby. Only allow one run, and you can win. So the Jays get off to a good start in this stretch that I'm talking about yesterday, the eight games against the Phillies, Reds, and Orioles, where they, like I said, they just need to keep their heads above water. Start, good. Good start. Win the game. But like I said, that's what you got to have. You got to have elite starting pitching that gives up a run, and then bridge it to your bullpen for the final four innings, maybe three, depending on how the starter's going, when it's one of the top three guys. Have them deal and shut down your opponent. Hang around the game so that you can get squeaky singles like Springer's or fortuitous with a break like they got with Kevin Biggio getting hit on his toe in the first pitch of a bases loaded at bat immediately after a relief pitcher was completely wild and should not have been in the ball game anymore. And walked Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with what was probably the easiest walk of Vladdy's season. Anyway, the big story of the day, though, is Yusei Kikuchi. And, okay, I tweeted this yesterday that if the playoffs were this week, he'd be the number two starter. And frankly, if you're still saying Berríos, you're not paying attention. And I understand that Berríos has the better pedigree, that he's been the more consistent pitcher over the course of his career, that he's having a terrific season. I usually don't like these kinds of arguments because all you end up having to do in some way is tearing down the other guy rather than elevating the other or the one. But since the All-Star break, go look at their numbers. Go look at the two guys' numbers and tell me which one of those guys over their now six apiece appearances you would rather have in a playoff game. You see Kikuchi doesn't give up more than one run a game. It just doesn't happen. Again, go through this. Seattle, one run. Zero. Dodgers, one. Baltimore, one. Cleveland, one. And now Philly, one. With seven strikeouts, six strikeouts, eight strikeouts, three Ks. He is dominating. Genuinely, since the All-Star break, the best pitcher in all of baseball. The only conversation that you could actually be having if you were being reasonable about this is, hey, is he pitching so well that if the playoffs were this week, would he actually be the number one instead of Gausman? And I would go, no, you still want Gausman. Gausman's the man. He's your ace. You're throwing him and you're putting your best foot forward. He's absolutely your most consistent guy of the last two seasons. But as of right now, man, Berríos has been good. Same thing, sub four ERA since the All-Star break, but his whip is 1.4. His whip's 1.4. His OPS against him is much higher than Yusei Kikuchi's. It's just like the two of them right now, as it stands, the last month and a bit, they haven't been the same pitcher. One guy has clearly jumped ahead, and that's Yusei Kikuchi. And, you know, somebody tweeted this at me, and I've mentioned this before, but it's so true. I cannot remember. I was really sitting down last night and trying to think about it. Like, when has a player ever flipped a narrative from one season to the next quite like this? When has this ever happened? I can't remember it. Like, I cannot remember a time where someone was this down and down this bad, like Yusei Kikuchi was last year, where we had images of him sitting in the dugout and you just felt like, man, he looks like his dog just died. He looks like the love of his life just married somebody else. He is crushed right now. I did a whole thing about how it must be just completely isolating and lonely for this guy, given where he's at with the team. And now he is just dealing. 1.29 ERA and 36 Ks over his last six starts. Domination. Complete domination. Lowest ERA in the American League since the All-Star break. Domination. Domination. This isn't like, oh, the guy. And even like with Berríos, who led the American League in ERA last year, right? Who really struggled at points in the season. He still had a ton of quality starts, and his career in general had been excellent. Yusei Kikuchi had his one half All-Star season with the Mariners, but even when he signed here, people looked at it and went, yeah, look at the second half. Look at how he fell off. And so you're always going to take this with, I don't know, a bit of a grain of salt, because you're going to say, all right, I'm not going to freak out about Yusei. I'm not going to give him as many flowers as he probably deserves right now, because that's always going to be in the back of your mind. Because there isn't that consistency with that track record. Like with Berríos, this was to a degree expected. This is the guy that you traded for. You gave up two of your top three prospects at the time in order to land that guy. And if you're doing a trade like that, you're expecting a pitcher that you're handing him an 8-year contract, right? Or was it seven? I think it might've been a 7-year contract, but you're handing him a 7-year deal worth over $100 million. This is what you were expecting. You weren't expecting this from Yusei Kikuchi. This is completely, completely, completely unprecedented. Relief pitchers don't count. You don't get to go year to year with a relief pitcher. I'm talking about like a starting pitcher or, you know, a regular bat or an NBA starter. Like, when has this happened? When has this happened for Toronto sports? If it did, it's before my time. I remember a Toronto Maple Leaf having this, where there was just someone that was a disaster of a signing. Like, put it this way. Imagine if David Clarkson would have come back and dominated the year after his initial one in Toronto. Like, that's what we're looking at here. That's what kind of story this is with Yusei. So, good for him, man, because everybody loves a redemption story. By all accounts, he seems like a great dude. And aesthetically wise, watching him pitch is gorgeous. He is my favorite, without a doubt, pitcher to watch amongst the Blue Jays right now. And that does include Kevin Gausman. From a pure aesthetic standpoint, the 97 pinpoint nasty stuff from the left side, whew, nothing beats it. Nothing beats it right now. So yeah, no shots at Berríos. Amazing season. Terrific season. If he's the number two, I'm not going to cry about it. But right now, if you're looking at the most recent body of work, which you can include as a month and a half, right? Since the All-Star break. It's one guy's job and one guy's job only. If he keeps going like this, it's going to be an absolute no-brainer. If he's even close to this, it should be an absolute no-brainer if the Blue Jays get to the place. Hey, if they do, it's going to largely be in part because this guy pitched so extremely well. What, you got numbers for me?
Since the All-Star break, Kikuchi has the highest Fangraphs WAR among pitchers in the majors.
Yeah.
1.4.
Yeah. Anyway, I got a chance. Yeah, it was a 7-year deal, 131 for Jose Berríos. Yesterday, I got a chance to speak with Michael Bunting. It was good. I enjoyed speaking with him. Gave me a little bit new perspective on the guy. It's always nice catching up with someone that was a former Leaf and getting their perspective. We talked about all things, his new contract, his negotiations with the Leafs, his suspension during the postseason, his conversations with Sheldon Keefe, his relationship with Sheldon Keefe. Here it is now.
It still feels a little bit weird to say, but it's Carolina Hurricanes forward Michael Bunting. What's up, man?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Good, man. When does that stop feeling weird? Immediately? Like, does that ever? Like, I know you've switched teams before, but you've been with the Leafs for a couple of seasons, and now you're with a rival.
Yeah. It's kind of just, you know, part of the business. You know, once you start a new team, obviously I really enjoyed my time in Toronto. It's home here. I grew up a Leaf fan, so I will always cherish that last couple 2 years of playing here. That being said, I'm really excited to start my next chapter with Carolina.
You know what makes business easier?
What's that?
$13.5 million, I bet.
You know, obviously, that's a little bit of a bonus to boot. So, playing the NHL every single day is definitely a privilege. And yeah, I'm really excited to kind of start this next chapter with Carolina and head down there and, you know, start that with meeting the team and meeting everybody. I'll probably head down there in a couple weeks.
That's cool, man. Yeah, no, honestly, congrats on the contract, man. Like, it's obviously well-earned. You know, you had a couple of great seasons here. I think that you've got a great story, especially given that it seems like, you bet on yourself when you came to Toronto. I don't know if this has been discussed before. I couldn't find anything on it, but did you have better offers, like, from money standpoint before you decided to come to Toronto?
Yeah, I did, actually. I had a few options going to free agency. Obviously, I think I only played about 26 NHL games, but, you know, that last call-up I had in Arizona, I had some success. I was able to put up some good numbers in that little stint. So, you know, coming from the American League and not really making that much, you know, it came down to a decision of, you know, taking the money and going somewhere else or coming home to Toronto. And I knew I wasn't going to make as much here, but I think when that decision came up, it was kind of a no-brainer to come home and experience that. You know, I was familiar with Kyle and I was familiar with Sheldon too, so that helped my decision back then as well. And obviously, you know, it worked out and I had a great 2 years here.
Did you ever have a moment like after you first signed it for less money, like, oh my God, I'm not a rich guy. Why did I do this? how could I turn down that money?
You know what? Honestly, no, I actually never regretted, you know, our signing here in Toronto. I think, in the end of the day, that was something that I really wanted to do. You know, everybody that grew up in Toronto, obviously, that likes hockey are usually Leaf fans. So that was like myself and my family. So it was really cool to experience that and go through all that these last couple of years. So I said it before, but I will definitely cherish these years forever.
So I definitely want to talk about, you know, you going to Carolina and the process that happened this offseason. But yeah, just because we're on the topic, you know, a lot of guys will say, and especially guys I think that have a lot of times that haven't even played in Canadian markets, will talk about, yeah, them not looking forward to it. Or some people will leave those markets and talk about, yeah, the difficulty of playing here. And how much of that was a consideration for you? Like, did it actually meet your expectation? Like, again, you grew up as a Leaf fan, so you knew what somewhat what the media climate was going to be. You had to have a pretty strong understanding of, hey, it's cool to be around my family and friends, but that also comes back with, you know, you sit down at the dinner table, now you're playing for, you know, those teams that they're far more intimate with and that they have that connection to. Like, was there, you know, you said it was a dream, you don't regret it. Obviously, you ended up coming here, so you weren't shy from it, especially for less money. But, yeah, how much of that actually met your expectation about maybe the things that you might have been nervous about?
Yeah, obviously coming from Arizona, it's not that big of a hockey market compared to Toronto. So I was kind of coming into it expecting for the media to be a lot and whatnot, just because I grew up here and I know that, you know, Toronto loves the Leafs and everybody around it loves the Leafs. So. But yeah, I know it was great. All the media that, you know, come into our room and ask questions after the game and stuff, you know, you build relationships with them and, they're just doing their job and, all of them were great. You know, it just comes with the territory and I didn't really shy away from that. I kind of knew that coming in and, I expected if I had a bad game, it would be in the media. And I expected if I had a good game, it'd be in the media. So, that stuff didn't bother me. I kind of welcomed it and had fun with it as well. I try to, you know, anytime I was, you know, ask questions and stuff like that to keep it light and just have fun. And I feel like I did a pretty good job with that.
Did anything faze you?
You know what? Not really. It was just more, I was just trying to have fun and enjoy it. And I feel like I did that. And I tried to, you know, take it all in because at the end of the day, it was really my first NHL experience. Yes, I definitely did have time in Arizona, but it was during the COVID year, no fans until that end of that season. And so really coming into the Leafs was my first experience in the NHL. And so I just try to enjoy it and just take it day by day because, I played over 330 American League games. So this was my shot and I just kind of didn't want to take it for granted and overthink anything and just play my game and have fun.
You know, that's actually pretty interesting perspective. Like that, yeah, you got your shot and then, yeah, you had to work your ass off to get there all those years in the AHL, a little bit of ECHL time. And then, yeah, you finally crack the Leafs, your hometown team. It's like maybe you're not bothered by the opinion of a beat writer or a Twitter person the same way that you would have been if, you know, you just get handed the shot right away coming out of the OHL or just like after spending only a year in the minors. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. I feel, to be honest, like obviously there is pressure always and everyone puts pressure on themselves, but I was definitely just like very appreciative of the opportunity I was getting. And I was just, not putting too much pressure on myself. And I feel like that's what helped me succeed here. I just kind of, you know, just went in every day with a smile and had fun and enjoyed my time with my teammates and played hard when I got out there. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you played a lot of games too. You were 79 the first year and then you played the full season last year. We're able to stay healthy. But, okay, let be honesty time. Did you even, like, when you bet on yourself, when you said, you know what, I'm going to sign this two-year deal, I'm going to do it at, you know, what is ultimately, like, not a huge dollar amount, I'm taking less, did you think it was going to go as well as it did, like, where you're going to score, you know, back-to-back seasons with 23 goals?
You know what? I didn't know what was going to happen. I've always believed in myself, even when I spent many, many years in the minors, that I could play in this league and I can be an effective player. So I think it all just started with just confidence going up in Arizona and then getting my shot and proving that. So I kind of just kept building off of that in Toronto. And I knew, you know, coming in, I remember when free agency opened, a little bit of talks and kind of knowing that they were left side wasn't as strong. So I pictured myself in a top nine or top six position. So I kind of just went into training camp and aiming for that and then kind of just keep going. But, you know, I built chemistry with Austin and Mitch and in that first year, and I kind of just ran with it and just, you know, each game more confidence would build and you kind of, you feel like you belong in the NHL and you feel like you can keep up with everybody. So I just kind of work with that every single day and, give credit to Mitch and Maddie. You know, they've been great to work with and to play with, and you know, they were a lot of fun to play with, and I definitely have to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, that's also interesting though, because I think that there was an assumption that with you taking less money and you taking that deal with Toronto, that maybe it was, I don't want to say promised to you, because yeah, it's the National Hockey League, but that it would have been strongly implied you would have been given a very, very good opportunity to play with that top line. Like how much of that was a part of your initial negotiation to come here?
Yeah. Well, I didn't really have much of a leg to stand on. I only played 26 games, but yeah. They did mention that to me, saying, hey, look at our left side. The top three kind of positions are wide open, and whatever one you fall in will be your spot. So come into camp and kind of give it your all, and then we'll see how the season goes. So I knew that, you know, the top line was open and it was an option for me. And you know, that's what kind of happened. I don't think I started there, but, you know, I just kind of kept going and then played a few games with them and the chemistry just built and then away we went. So it was definitely, it was a lot of fun. And, yeah, I just kind of just kept building off of my confidence.
So there's always this thing, and I'm sure it's, you know, harder to play with worse players too at times, but, you know, there's kind of a cliche in hockey that not everyone can play with great players, right? Not everyone can play with highly talented players, and that sometimes it doesn't mesh that way. Was there something in particular, like when you started playing with those two guys specifically? Because, yeah, they're the guys you spent the most time with, that, you know, you went into focused with a certain goal, or was it more just about, you know, maintaining and playing your game and staying true to yourself?
Yeah, I think it was just more maintaining my game and being true to myself. I know how my style is. I know what makes me successful. So I just try to keep true to that. And I feel like, I played a hard forecheck game. And once I retrieved the puck, I try to make as many plays as I could. And I feel like I'm able to do that. I feel like I can kind of see the game pretty quick. So obviously playing with those two players, or even when I played with Willie too, and you got to be thinking quick or you'll kind of get left behind on the line. So I just try to stay true to myself, and I ended up meshing pretty well.
So walk me through this offseason a little bit. How important was it for you to sign with a contender? Like, when you hit free agency, obviously, like, man, you had to get paid, right? And like, you were going to get offers, and I'm sure there was more than one. But how big a consideration with signing Carolina was, yeah, their current roster?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, obviously playing with Toronto, being a contender every single year, once I, you know, realized that it wasn't going to work out here, I transitioned to looking at free agency and making a game plan for that. And that was one of my number one things. Obviously, you know, you... you got to get paid accordingly and whatnot. That's that business side of it. But I did tell my agent that I wanted to win, and I didn't want to just leave. I wanted to still win, and I wanted to contend, because playoff hockey is a lot of fun to be a part of, and to be a part of a good team. So kind of once free agency opened, went through the motions and whatnot, and Carolina reached out. And once they kind of reached out, it was almost like a no-brainer to me. Obviously, they've been very close for a long time, and I feel like I'm going to be able to help them and hopefully get over that hump. So I feel like they fit my game as well, just kind of a fast, in-your-face and offensive flying kind of game. So I'm looking forward to see what the future holds here.
So you said when things weren't going to work out here, I know that everybody always says I'm not thinking about the contract in season, and maybe that's partially too. Maybe you guys don't think about it as much as some of us would say, but yeah, what was it like during the year? Did you want to try to work something out with Toronto? Like, what were the negotiations like, and when did you know that it wasn't going to happen?
Yeah, to be honest, not much went on during the season. I think our main goal was, to make the playoffs and contend for the Stanley Cup. So the season flies by pretty fast. So it wasn't a lot of contract talk went on during the season. And then kind of once the off season came along and whatnot, and I didn't really hear much. And then it just kind of figured that it wasn't going to work out. So that's when I started transitioning to free agency and focusing on that, because obviously I wanted to make sure I was in a good spot leading up to free agency, and I'm really happy of how it ended up with Carolina.
Do you think that the Leafs front office upheaval changed any of that for you?
I'm not really sure what transpired or whatnot, what they thought, but that's the business side, and you can't really worry about that. You just kind of keep it going, and like I said, I'm just looking forward to the future and my next chapter here with Carolina.
But did they offer you a deal, or was it just kind of like preliminary talks and you guys didn't get that far down the road?
It was just quick talks, nothing extensive.
Did that piss you off?
No. Like I said, that's the business, and you understand how it works, and we're playing in a cap era, and the cap obviously comes in situations with every single team, and they tried their best to make everything work, and every team tries to make the best team that they can with the cap situation that they're in. So, that being said, I totally understand the business side of it, and once free agency opened and Carolina came calling, I didn't hesitate.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not trying to get you in trouble. I know you're still in the league, and so you can be very cautious with this answer, but do you feel like the refs treated you fairly last season?
I think it's
no.
Obviously, the media like to amplify that a little bit, but that's just how hockey is. Things happen so fast. We're so emotional out there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I can get emotional. Even the refs get emotional, it happens so fast, and I don't hold anything. Obviously, the Toronto media made that a little bit of a story, but like I said, I come in, I'm not really like that off the ice. I come in with a laugh every day and a smile, and I really wasn't focused on that at all. I didn't even think about it. I just kind of wanted to go out there every single game and play my game, and I do know I get emotional and I get loud out there, and they deal with it the best they can. So, yeah.
Listen, I don't like refs, so like I'm on your side here, okay? Like I think that most fans don't. I know it's a hard job to have, but
there were
definitely times last season because, okay, you led the league, I think, in penalties drawn the year before, or at least you were damn near close. You were right at the top, and then it felt like it shifted, and yeah, there were definitely times, man, where it felt personal. And I'm talking about this as like an objective viewer, where you would watch these games and you'd be like, oh, damn. And I wonder what the process was like in terms of, you said it, the media makes a bigger deal. And once you're in the game and once you're in the flow of it, you're just playing, right? And I know you said you get emotional. That was very clear. You're a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve when he plays the game. But Did you have talks like with the team, the league? Like, was there communication between you and officials? Like, there had to be some point during the year where something was said amongst, you know, some group involving you.
To be honest, I've never had a talk with the league or the head officials about how everything went. But like you said before, their job is hard. And you know what? So much happens in a hockey game, and things are so fast. And there's only two of them out there to be able to make a call. Obviously, the linesmen are out there as well. But you know, things are going to be missed. The game's fast. It's emotional. And I don't hold any grudges from how things transpired or whatnot. That's just hockey. And you know, I'll go out every single game and just keep playing my game. And then they ref, and you know, they're just doing their job as well, like you said. So, I'm not really worried about that whole situation at all.
You know, what's kind of interesting talking to you, man, is so obviously, you know, you ask people about who you're going to interview, and you try to get a feeling for somebody before you chat with them, and like get a feel for like what someone's about. And you know, your reputation off the ice is kind of reflective in the way that you're talking to me now, which is like, you're a nice guy. You're a happy-go-lucky guy. You're a guy with good perspective. But then you step out on the ice, and I mean this in like a respectful way. You're a pest. You have this edge to your game. You play that way. And I wonder, like, what clicks for you? Like, is it the competitiveness? Like, how does that kind of shift? Because, you know, I see Ryan Reeves, right? And then I see the way he carries himself off the ice. I'm like, yeah, this makes sense that he plays this way. You know what I'm saying? Yours doesn't, like, your off-ice persona doesn't really meet up with your on-ice persona, if that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. It's kind of funny you say that, because a lot of people that first meet me kind of don't expect me to be how I am. I'm definitely, you know, off the ice, I love to joke around. I love keeping everything light. And I'm always talking and making the jokes or getting joked on. So, and I love all that kind of stuff. So, I think ever since I was a little kid, the second I started playing sports, I was ultra competitive. And I don't really know, but where it comes from. Well, actually, no, I know where it comes from. I have a very competitive family, but it's just more like once I put the skates on and I get out there, I just kind of turn into that other side, and I just want to win so bad. And I definitely, bring my emotion into the game. So maybe I build it all up from off the ice and just bring it onto the ice. So, I think, you know, that complements my game, and that makes the player who I am. And obviously it's gotten me this far, and I definitely will continue to play like that, because that's just who I am.
So who's the most competitive one in the house, and what's the game?
I would honestly, I grew up with my grandpa in my house, and we used to play euchre a lot.
And big euchre guy too.
Big euchre family. So I would have to say him. He was ultra competitive, and he did not like to lose.
Do you table talk?
No, because if we table talk, that gets
you hesitated
down pretty fast. Yeah,
yeah.
You kind of, you know, euchre, you throw some signs through the card, so that's how that's how you try to talk.
Yeah, that's a classic table talker answer. Like, no, it's signs through the cards. A little hesitation. Okay, so the ref thing. We mentioned. I set it up as, do you feel like they treated you fairly? I'm going to switch this one up. Were you surprised by the length of the suspension after the Chernak hit?
You know what? The NHL made their decision. Obviously, the player safety made their decision, I have to live with that. And you know, it was unfortunate that, you know, I put my team in that situation, and I definitely did not want to injure anybody. Obviously, that's not. Not the player I want to be, and I have a lot of respect for Chernak. You know, we've played a lot of games against each other, and we've competed a lot. And I actually shot him a text after that and kind of apologizing, because that was not my intention at all, to get him high. Mm-hmm. But that being said, you know, you just kind of got to live with it. And they made their decision, and you know, I'm fine with it. And I just try to be the most supportive teammate I could off the ice. It was brutal watching and being in the stands and not being able to be a part of it, but I just try to bring my energy elsewhere. It's just obviously you never want to get suspended at all, and especially not in playoffs.
Did Chernak text you back?
Yeah, I heard from him. I heard about all that. And like I said before, he's a competitor. He's a great defenseman. And, you know, I actually have a lot of fun playing against him. And we kind of have this mutual respect that, you know, we would talk on the ice, but we also would battle really hard. So it's definitely unfortunate, you know, what transpired. And that was not my intentions at all. But I'm happy to see. I think I saw a post on the NHL Instagram that, you know, he's back skating and healthy. So I'm looking forward to continue playing against him. And obviously he's done a lot in this league, and he's a good defenseman.
Were you surprised that you weren't going to play in your first game back? Like, how did that conversation go, given, again, your position was a top six guy who had multiple 20-goal seasons?
No, I wasn't surprised. I have a great relationship with Sheldon, and you know, he just sat me down and told me the reasoning, and I respected it, and I totally understood it. You know, I think we won three in a row there, so when it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. So I totally understood, and I wanted whatever they thought was the best for the team. I was all for it. So like I said, I just wanted to bring my energy, bring my positive energy, and be supportive of the guys and help out as any way as I could. And I felt like that I did that for the time that I was out.
Yeah. I mean, there was no fuss. So I think that that's pretty much kind of what you can ask for. It's interesting. Like you say, Keith was part of the reason that you came to Toronto and that you had a good relationship with him, because again, from the outside perspective, it seemed like you guys had real frustrations with one another throughout the year. Like, you think that was an overblown story, a misunderstood story? Like, what was misunderstood about your guys' relationship?
Yeah. Like, that's just another little example, but I, like I said, I don't really let anything faze me and all that. I just kind of just rolled with everything. But, you know, Sheldon's an unbelievable coach. He kind of started my career in the Sioux, and I built a really good relationship with him there. And he was one of the reasons why I wanted to come to Toronto. And I said that in the meeting, but yeah, but it, so we never said that we could talk to one another. And I play with a lot of motion, and I can, you know, I try not to step over line. And sometimes I did, and he would just tell me, and, I would listen to exactly what he would say. And, I always had respect for him. And like you said, it just on the outside, maybe looking in, it looked like that, but that I can definitely say that was not the case at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I would say too, that you could see how, like, he obviously can run hot. You on the ice can clearly run hot. You could see how people would be like, okay, we're going to take this one clip and it's going to end up. I think social media has really changed this too, especially in, like, in the way that we perceive things, because you'll see like a clip over and over and over again, or it'll be shared like a million different times. But yeah, you could see how like two guys with a history together could get into it with one another and then just end up being fine later, right? Like, I think that's a lot of this.
Yeah.
And as somebody who runs hot, you know, who's a competitive euchre player herself, I can testify to that. Okay, so I guess last one from me on this is, how sweet was it to beat Tampa?
I think just, you know, I wouldn't even say just – because it was Tampa. I think obviously just, you know, being able to, you know, get over that hump of that first round, like, we aren't oblivious, naive to that, you know, that we haven't made it out of the first round in quite some time. So, you know, for us to get over that hump last year, it just felt great. And, you know, unfortunately we weren't able to extend that, but the playoffs is a different animal, and looking forward, they went through the top three out of the top, like three of the top five teams in the NHL to get to the Stanley Cup final. And you got to tip your cap there. And, you know, they had a great run, and they got hot at the right time. So, yeah, that was just unfortunate how that happened, but, for us, but yeah, I know it felt good to, you know, win that round, and we definitely, felt like maybe, you know, It can calm down a little bit, but yeah.
It didn't.
Yeah.
It calmed down for like a second, and then game one of the next round happened, and it was obviously not calm. It was not calm here whatsoever. Yeah, hey, man, again, congrats on the big contract. Good luck with everything down in Carolina. Enjoy what I'm assuming is going to be, you know, a massive house down there, because I also feel like everybody in Carolina is just like a mega mansion. And then, yeah, enjoy, yeah, playing for Rod Brindamore and just, yeah, being with that organization. And good luck with everything, man. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to it. And I guess we'll see you when I'm in Toronto.
There he is, Michael Bunting. It's always a little weird talking to guys that are still in the league who have signed with a new team and are trying to focus on that new team. Because all I care about is here. And all he wants to do is move on. And so you have to kind of ride the line between what happened and what's going on now. But he was a good sport about looking back. Some guys give you they start to repeat the answer. That's when you know it starts to get bad, where they go, and that's just in the past, and I'm moving forward, and I'm looking forward to my time with blank. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, this is boring. Why did you agree to do this? So good on Bunting, man. I thought that there was some solid honesty there, especially about the nature of his contract. I believe him when he talks about his suspension. And especially the part where he, for lack of better words, took it like a champ and sat out that extra game, even though I don't agree with that premise of, well, don't fix what's broke, or whatever I'm talking about. No, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
My brain just completely went full Ricky there. I just tried to do a Ricky. So he should have been in the lineup for that game. And that was only exemplified further by the way that he played the first game back. I kind of don't like the answer about beating Tampa, because they played them the year before. And those games were really chippy. It had to feel a little better. I don't know why guys are reluctant sometimes to just admit that they've got a little bit more juice against another team. Because clearly you do. Clearly Tampa Bay felt different than had you played the New York Rangers. I'm sorry. Or had you beat Florida in the first round, given that they actually eked in. Or, you know, had it been Pittsburgh, whatever. There's two teams that were the sweetest ones to beat, and they were Tampa and Boston. They're at the top. They've been the class of the division. They've been big brother, big bully, whatever you want to put it as. And Toronto beat those guys. Had to feel great. The Florida series went so poorly that it's kind of hard to appreciate that now. It's hard to look back on that right now. The offseason was so tumultuous. But that was a really happy time for Leafs fans. When I was at the Argos game with a couple of buddies the other day, we were talking about the way that it felt that night. And the unfortunate nature of being a tortured sports fan to this degree, and having the Leafs' confidence going into that Florida series evaporate so quickly and have it be such a short series, right, where they only got one other win, it kind of robbed that memory a little bit. But that was a happy one. That was a really, really good one. And it's not one that you get to celebrate the same way, but it still is nice to look back on in isolation from time to time. You're with a friend, whatever. It's not something that you brag about, but it's something that you can enjoy and that you should enjoy, because guess what? As we've learned with this team, there's not a lot of those enjoyable playoff experiences. In fact, it's the first one since the salary cap got put in, so I'd take it. I think the most interesting thing, though, clearly, is that Toronto didn't play ball at all contractually. There was basically no interest from two different front offices, essentially. And so you can say that that's Shanahan, because he stays put the entire time. Maybe that's the common thread. But either way, he got a really nice contract, a really nice contract. It wasn't one Toronto could necessarily afford. I forgot to actually ask him if he would have taken a hometown discount. I regret that now.
He said he did already. It didn't sound like he was willing to again, right?
He said what?
When he initially came here from Arizona, he said
He said he had better offers. Yeah. So he probably, well, I don't know. That may mean that he would have accepted it again, especially since that was the primary spot that he wanted to be. But regardless, it's hard to envision Toronto having met his price.
4.5
Yeah, especially with term, right? Because here's the thing.
3 years, 13.5
You can look at the Bertuzzi contract and say, well, they gave him that, but it's a one-year deal. Mm-hmm. Same with Klingberg. Same with Domi.
Yeah.
So they clearly didn't want to have money on the books for players that were not their top-tier talent over the course of a couple of seasons. I'm not sure if it does. I don't know if it was him as a player. The other part of it, though, too, which made it tough for him in a contract negotiation, is that one, that he wanted term, obviously, that he needed to get paid. He needed to make sure that, again, this is a guy who's not making, he wasn't making $1 million the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. He was grinding away in the AHL his entire career. I think he's 27 years old or he's 28. He's one of the two. This contract is going to take him into his 30s. This will likely be the most lucrative deal he ever signs.
27.
Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. Hard to envision, though, at age 30, he'll sign a bigger deal. Maybe if the cap truly skyrockets. But either way, he needed to ensure that he got his. I don't think anybody faults him for it. Not a soul can, especially given that, yeah, he did come home. He did one of the things, and he was unfazed. You know, you could say whatever you want about the guy, and people often, the antics bothered people. The consistency, the way that he balanced that temperament at times in Toronto's lineup. I know it frustrated me too. There were times where it felt like he embellished. But he played a lot of games. He scored 46 goals. And he was one of the guys that clearly, in talking to him, was not fazed at all by the market. Only had positive things to say. Was happy to play here. And ended up putting his money where his mouth was by taking less in order to be here. Got a great opportunity, right? Ended up working out just swell, got paid. But it, and it's a model that other guys should remember when they're considering the Leafs as they've got this kind of talent. It's a model that other guys, I think, have remembered, except for they've been able to take that extra year off of the books where it's been the Bertuzzis who are more established, the Klingbergs who are more established, but probably like much bigger risk, even on a one-year deal at four than Bunting was on the two-year deal. But I wonder how much of this is going to be a model for Toronto moving forward if they continue to have those big three guys. Because I think we can still say big four with Tavares. He's a good regular season player. He's still a good player. It's just he's a diminishing player. He's not worth $11 million. But you have a season next to John Tavares, you're probably going to put up big numbers. We talk, even me, just right now, when we talk about Tavares as though he's like David Kampf. It's not the case. It's a little
still,
much.
Still John Tavares.
Yeah, it gets a little extreme at times. Yeah. It's a little extreme at times. Anyways, I'm appreciative of his time. I always like it when a guy's honest. And I really do, I will say that, I really do respect the coming home, playing for the city, playing for the your boyhood team, taking less money, and then not letting the market affect you in a meaningful way. Never having that, let's just say, element we've seen from some of the other guys when things have gone poorly and there's been some poutiness and some aggression towards people and some blaming of the media and the fans. And yeah, I don't think that he really exemplified that. So good luck to him in Carolina. He's going to be so annoying to play against, though. Boy. And I mean that in both a positive and a negative way. Like, good for him that he's that kind of annoying player, but my God. First time he tries to embellish something in a corner against the Leafs. Whew. Or in front of the net.
You're going to lose your mind.
People are going to lose it. Anyway, quick break. Let's come back and have a quick chat about Jamal Murray.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
So Jamal Murray's out for the World Cup of Basketball. It's a really tough blow for Canada basketball fans who have been dying for a complete roster and some superstar talent to be there. And yeah, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's there. But Jamal Murray issued this statement, quote, "When I came into training camp, I wanted to see how my body would respond after a long and demanding season and if I would be physically able to compete at the highest level for the World Cup. In consultation with medical staff and the team, it's clear that additional recovery is required, and I have made the difficult decision to not participate in the tournament. It's still a dream of mine to represent Canada at the Olympics, and I will support the team every step of the way as they pursue their goal," end quote. You can't really be pissed at Jamal Murray. Not in this case. I get that the initial reaction from a lot of people is to roll their eyes and go, wait, like, you can't just play basketball for a couple of games? Because I know that's how I felt immediately. It's like, wait, this is not a million games. You know, this is not an entire season. You committed to the program a few weeks ago. What changed? But no, he was coming off of a major injury and then played an entire season, then went deep in the postseason. I could see how there's some hesitancy from him to be able to do this. I could see how there's some hesitancy from the Nuggets, some desire for them to repeat, and probably a belief from him that, yeah, that could add some extra taxation to a body that can't handle it, given that he's going to need to be healthy for this entire season for Denver, and then hopefully they're going to be title contenders again. So no real fault to Jamal Murray. This one's an acceptable excuse. There have been guys definitely that I haven't felt that way about. I think I've been pretty critical of those guys in the past. I've made my position pretty clear on a lot of them. And I do think there have been quite a few people in general that have just kind of fallen over to try to make excuses for people in the program, for players in the program, NBA players. This to me is a pretty acceptable reasoning. Guys had it's almost an underrated story at this point, the injuries that he's had to overcome in order to regain the level of a career that he's having right now. But now Canada's in a position where they are absolutely unequivocally no longer contenders. They're not contenders to win. They ain't beating the United States with this roster. Canada's path to win at the World Cup was a two-headed monster of Jamal Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Full stop. It's not Dylan Brooks. You know, like, this isn't Kelly Olynyk. They've got a good balanced roster. There's some NBA talent there, but they ain't winning this thing anymore. If you had a futures bet, if you would have gone out, slapped one down on Canada, what, I think they were plus 500 or plus 600 at one point.
Yeah, they were second behind the USA.
Yeah, and what are they now, you know?
Plus 750, tied with France for second.
No, see, that's...
Tied with France for
second. That ain't right. Even that ain't right.
U.S. looking at a nice minus 110 to win the whole thing.
Yeah. But
that makes sense.
But that ain't right. You can't bet Canada anymore. They're not contenders. Here's the other part of it, though. They damn well still better qualify for the World Cup with this roster. This doesn't remove them, for the Olympics with this roster. This does not remove the team from finishing top two in the Americas. They still absolutely better do that. But it does remove some excitement from the idea that, hey, maybe they could pull an upset and actually win the whole damn thing. They still got to qualify for the Olympics. This is not an excuse. So if you're a Canada basketball fan, you're still absolutely peeled to this tournament, knowing that that is the expectation for this group. There is absolutely 100% no shot that they still shouldn't be able to accomplish that with this roster and with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the rest of the guys around the team. Anyway. Sucks, though. Sucks. It's heartbreaking. You felt it was coming when they had the trickle down of what was going on a week ago when Grange wrote that piece. And now to see it in actual reality didn't make it sting any less. Anyways, we'll do a quick break. We'll do a podcast only. I got a couple of questions for the boys. So subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, share it, and hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus anytime. All right. Podcast only portion of the show. And I'm starting it off with this. Messi scored again.
He did. It's his ninth goal.
Their team was last place.
Yeah.
And now, what's the situation?
They're in the final of the League's Cup, which is essentially a combination between Liga MX in Mexico and the MLS.
Yeah.
Win this big competition.
Yeah. I remember when TFC was in it and then they got their asses kicked.
No, that was the CONCACAF Champions League. It's very confusing, JD.
No, TFC was in the League's Cup as well and they got immediately.
They were in the League Cup this year. What JD's talking about is when TFC lost in CONCACAF final in 2019 to Cruz ALV, I think it was.
Cruz Azul.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't remember, but I'm talking about after they won the championship.
Yeah, you're talking about the Champions League. This is the League Cup. It's a totally different tournament. It's very the CONCACAF Champions League has all of CONCACAF in it. So not Cuba.
This is why I hate soccer.
Yeah,
this is why I just stick with what I know, which is international soccer. It makes sense to me. Yeah. You qualify, you play other nations. It's straightforward-ish.
The League's Cup is just three countries. This is Canada, USA, Mexico.
This is bull. I hate this.
It's not easy. I just hate
all the little cups. Like, God! That's why I hate the NBA now. I saw they released the schedule for the stupid November tournament.
Oh my goodness.
Who could possibly care? Whatever.
It is confusing. It is very confusing. But anyway, at Miami, worst team in the league going into this.
Whatever.
Cup,
now they're
sure.
contenders for a cup of some significance.
They had no business winning before Messi would be there.
But this is okay. This is my question.
This is the point.
To you too. Has this been a good or a bad thing for MLS? Like, obviously, it's a good thing that he's there and you get to watch Messi. But is this not just a little bit embarrassing? I know he's the best player on earth. I get that.
Yeah.
But it just feels as though he's playing farmers.
Yeah. No, I do see your point. Is that, like, it's obviously good for the MLS because everybody's watching.
Yeah,
but then
that's
it's
what I'm saying.
How,
is this good or bad for the MLS that he is kicking the living you-know-what out of these guys so drastically? Like, the goal he scored, he kicked that from the moon.
Yeah, he was like 30. Yeah.
He kicked that from the moon. And he just,
I feel like Mackie could have ran over and saved it.
Yeah.
I don't like the way you said that.
Love you, Austin.
Hey, Mackie, you couldn't have saved it.
No, I think it's awful for the MLS, to be honest with you. Everyone always talks about how bad of a league France is and Ligue 1, and it's the Farmers League
the
of
Bundesliga.
Europe. And this guy didn't put up stats like that. Their goal differential before he got there in 22 games was a negative 14. Since he's been there in six games, it's a plus 14. They also added Sergio Busquets, who's also a world-class player from Barcelona. He's very good.
And Jordi Alba,
but, you know, they're also washed up, to be honest with you. So, like, I think it's a disaster for the MLS. I think it shows, like, anyone who wants to talk about the MLS being one of the better leagues in the world, it's like, yeah, sure, buddy. I know.
But who does that? Nobody does that. Like, I remember I asked Riccio.
People would argue MLS is better than France before.
That's a horrific take. For me, a casual knows that that's literally never been said by
like
any human
AHL
being on the planet
than
other than you. What are you doing? Just, all right, pipe down now. You're done. You're done now. You went too far. You mackied it. Okay. So I remember I talked to Riccio a couple of years ago asking him, like, hey, just out of curiosity, what would you rank MLS in terms of leagues on earth? And he was like, it's a fringe top 10. So he was like, it's a fringe top 10 league on planet earth. It could be top 10, but it's probably not. Like, that's the degree in which I've always had the expectations. I just thought that the league from that point to now was getting a little bit better, that it was getting a little bit more professional, that, yeah, it was at least respectable. Mm-hmm. You know, like, a respectable league.
Currently, the league is ranked 16th by...
It's not French top 10. It's a developmental league.
Yeah.
It's a developmental league for leagues in Europe and for leagues in South America, Brazil and Argentina, to buy players.
There's a lot of young talents that come through Mexico, USA, Canada that'll go through, like Alfonso Davies, example, that'll come through the MLS, and then once they're good enough, gone to Europe.
Yeah.
Messi came here for a payday, and he's...
I know he came here for a payday.
Short-term, like, it's good for the MLS because everybody's watching, but...
He has to get the hell out, right? Like, he can't stay here for very long because this is embarrassing for him,
too. He's going to be 36, like, by the end of the
year. No, he'll be loaned in Barcelona in January. Yeah.
I would not be surprised at all if he got loaned back to Barcelona.
The Beckham thing, when Beckham came here, right? He's like, oh.
Because nine goals in six games is a little much.
Nine goals in six games, and, like, he's, like, walking around most of the time. Like, you're looking at this goal right now.
It just came up on the TV in the studio. But, yeah, nine goals in six games.
By the way,
TFC's
leading scorer this year is four.
Yeah,
over the entire season in all competitions, and Messi already has
nine. Guess what? I was never going to confuse Insigne with Messi,
no,
so
I know.
It's all right. Is Insigne the top scorer still?
Yes.
Nice. Four goals. What a signing.
Bernadeschi has three.
Yeah.
And Bernadeschi has three.
Who is once the most popular player on earth.
Now he vapes.
And now they took his vape away for one day. This is the thing about vapors, okay? And this is why, like, okay. I probably shouldn't even weigh in on this because this sounds like pro-cigarette.
We've been established as pro-cigarette on this podcast for a while.
Yeah, but okay, I'm not pro-cigarette. I'm very anti-cigarette.
Anti-big tobacco.
No, never smoke. Never smoke.
So bad for you.
Somebody offers you a cigarette, don't do it. Awful. Awful, awful habit. I just hate the idea that still sort of exists that vaping is in some way better than cigarettes when I don't know how this is supported by science, one. But two, you little vape heads out there, like, When they vape nonstop. Have you ever been drinking with someone who vapes?
Yeah, and they think it's okay to do it inside.
I know,
that's too.
They, it's just like, yeah, they're shameless. Inside, it's crazy. They're shameless with it. Like,
don't let it dart up in your house.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, they'll do it on the subway. They'll do it in a bar. They'll do it in the bathrooms. They'll do it in the at the table doing the little like, and they blow the smoke down like with their top lip push up. It's the most like.
And then when you ask about it, you're the jerk. And it's like, no, what?
It's nothing. It's vapor. Exactly. No, the vape is a scourge on humanity. It is not. It has destroyed an entire. Well, actually, didn't destroy you guys. Gen Z, you guys stunk already. You stunk so bad. You guys the worst generation ever. I was talking about this with actually Ennis the other day. I was like, man, can you, like, soon it's going to be all the Gen Zers in sports. That's going to be a nightmare. Sports is done. Sports is canceled the second that it's all you guys in there.
I will say, just like the people my age and stuff like that are trying to make that claim that vaping's better for you than cigarettes. That's just one, like, that's a take where you just got to look at it and be like, how do you know? Like,
yeah,
where's your evidence?
No. Get your
there has
popcorn
not been
lung.
Enough time with vaping and circulation that you so have stupid. Any so proof stupid. That so it's stupid. Better.
Here's the thing. Both things are really bad for you. Like, don't be doing either
100%.
Of them. But yeah, I just, the frequency in which people vape and the amount people vape, it's like unbelievable to me. Every time I'm with someone who vapes, I cannot believe how much they're just with that thing. And also how short time will stretch before that person will be like, oh, I actually need my vape. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I really want to vape right now. They'll just say it to you out of the blue. They'll be like, oh, I want to vape. And you're like, okay.
Do you want to like touch some grass?
Yeah,
for,
it just it's
go
just
for
relax.
A hike too.
Anyway, what's next?
So Giants broadcaster, Dave Fleming. He lost his fantasy football league and he had to be the Giants bat boy for a day.
Love it.
Last year, two Giants players, Steven Duggar and Austin Slater, also had to do the same thing, but they had to tape a big L to the back. Fleming avoided that. What do you think of that punishment? And have you ever had to do a punishment for any of your fantasy football leagues?
So the big L on the back thing, who cares? So this guy's in the fantasy league with the players?
He's in a fantasy league. It didn't specify, but the players had their own club-wide one last year. And Fleming, it just said fantasy football.
I was going to say, that's a little odd. Because who is this guy playing with? He had to be with other broadcasters and they just copied the idea. That feels a little lame. If he's in the league with the players, that's kind of
interesting. It was just referred to as the team's fantasy football league. So yeah. I'm not exactly sure who it was.
So maybe it is. Maybe it's broadcasters. Maybe it's players. Pretty cool. I have never finished dead last in a fantasy football league. So no, I've never done a punishment. I'm in one fantasy league that's with my college friends. It's a 12-person league, and we've been running it for quite some time now. It's a keeper league. It's an auction league. It's a league where you can trade salary. It's a league where we have our message group, and it's active basically throughout the year. Yeah.
Serious
enough. In a way where there's a few more serious people, obviously, in the league that care more. My friends Sean and Matt, for example, who annoy me with their text messages about the league. Like, what about this? And I'm just, shut up. Leave me alone. It's the middle of summer. We don't need to be talking about this right now. Just to clarify, okay.
It's July. Want to make a trade?
It's just too much sometimes with them. But then there's, obviously, every league has this, though. Every league has this. There's always a couple people at the top of the league that care way too much.
Yep.
And they're the top people in the league that you really want to dethrone. And then there's the bottom class where there's a couple people in the league that are hanging on by a thread in any league that lasts a long time who are not paying attention to their team enough, who are not paying attention
they
to the league
set
enough,
their lineups.
Who get completely eviscerated in a trade yearly to the point where you go, why are you still doing trades? So I tried at one point as the commissioner of this league to institute punishments. But it's really hard as you become an adult to do it. I actually saw a video the other day of these guys. They put their buddy in a cage and did you see that one? They just put their buddy in a cage and they covered him with all kinds of syrup and
condiments. Yeah.
It's like milk and cereal.
And I went, this is weird and sucks. This is clout chasing weird garbage.
Yeah.
Obviously ones where it's people getting tattoos feels way too extreme to me personally. I kind of laugh at it when people get it. If you can come up with a really creative way to do it, that's fun. This is fun because that's accessible for them. You know, you're a little bit publicly shamed. You got to do a job you don't like to do. And it kind of just fits in with, yeah, it's fine. This one's a pretty good one, but not all of us are professional athletes with access to be the bat boy. Or
just for a day.
Yeah, and most of us would go, I can be the bat boy for a day?
That's
cool.
What I'm saying. I saw it, and I was like, dude,
he's the broadcaster and their player, so they don't want to do that. And you literally still could be a bat boy. Jobo could go sign up to be a bat boy tomorrow, and they would go, this is 100% appropriate. We see nothing wrong with this. Welcome to the team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's very much a reality for you. It's hard to come up with it. We had one where someone was supposed to run a 10K in the shirt of the league's choosing.
Oh.
Yeah, a custom-made shirt in the league's choosing. And it never came to fruition, and we never really ended up pursuing it too much. It was just one of those things where, again, when you're an adult, someone goes, yeah, I can't do this. Find me the 10K. Find me the shirt. And then people get a little disorganized. People live in different cities. It's harder to get done. So we tried that as an idea one year. But then we started getting stuck on what's allowed to be on the shirt, because it can't be too graphic, right? You can't have your friend running a 10K and stuff. No. You can leave it
you
to
can't
your
have them getting arrested.
You can leave it to your imagination.
Yeah.
We had an idea of last place had to have a photo prominently displayed in a picture frame in a person's home for a year.
Which photo?
Of the winner.
Of the winner. Oh, okay.
Winner would be a photo of their choosing in your house.
Like next to their family for a year.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good one, actually.
Yeah, never came to fruition. They're just hard to execute. And I just think, okay, this is the thing. It's tough to have one that isn't just lame and too little, but then it's very easy to have one that's, to me, far too extreme and lame.
Just, like, violent.
But I love the idea of it, and I still do. And even as we're talking about it, I kind of wish that we had one in our league, because there is nothing more infuriating than that one person when down the stretch they just stop caring.
Yeah.
They've still got a big waiver budget, or they've got waiver priority and they're not on the waivers.
Yeah.
And so it allows someone else to scoop up someone.
Yeah.
We do have a rule in our league where you have to set a lineup every week. Mm-hmm. We had collusion one year.
Oh.
We had a little collusion where one guy was definitely going to be out of the playoffs, and he sat a bunch of people in an attempt to help a guy make the playoffs. No, he wasn't banned, but they were they were fined.
No way.
We have
Did
fines.
You
actually? Yeah, we have fines in our league. We have fines in our league, and if you don't set a roster, you get fined.
How much?
Doesn't matter.
Right. Gotcha.
You can't kick that person out, but that person's the worst person that does that.
Yeah. And we have only ever I forgot about this. We used to do the Bill Simmons thing. We did it for 2 years.
You'd have 13 people come and you'd vote one out at the draft. Oh, that's so brutal. That's a good punishment.
I know, but that only worked. But that worked when we were literally all in college. That's why I forgot
you all
about
have
it.
To live together,
like,
right?
No, yeah. we didn't all live together. It wasn't 12 people in a house. But
well, in the same whatever, same area.
Yeah,
JD.
We were. We all lived in the same area, and we would show up to the draft and one person would get kicked out. My favorite is we did that one year and a guy whose nickname was Big Daddy got kicked out at the draft right after he showed up to the draft and had just bought a brand new Dallas Cowboy jersey unveiled it. He took off a hoodie and went da 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 da, and he was doing this whole thing about who he was going to draft.
He got booted after
and
that.
And then he got booted. Yeah, and you had to leave the party. That's the way we did it. We were like, you have to leave the draft. Only people who are in the draft are allowed to stay here. So he had to limp out of there with his new, I think it was a Tony Romo jersey.
Is that a friendship ender ever?
No, it wasn't. It was fine. He was pissed, but because here's what happens. This was the only one that I can remember. Because the other one, because we did it twice, but the other time, it was so obvious, and this was kind of what was lame about it. It was so obvious about who was going to get kicked out of the league that I don't think they showed up for the draft. And so it was just auto replacement. Yeah, they just didn't show up.
That's actually a great move because it takes all the fun away from you guys. Like, genius move on his part.
I know, but it was
also
just
lame.
But
it was kind of lame. Yeah, that was the thing, is we just had somebody in the league that was paying so little attention to it and was unapologetically bad at it, and then obviously was not going to be back, and so it was
there's just no point at that point.
Yeah, it just sucked. But Big Daddy wanted to be in the league, and he got boosted.
Sorry, bud.
Big Daddy got kicked. Oh, God, I hate not swearing on this.
Well, you can.
He got kicked out of the league. Anyway, that was fun. He tried to, like, make this whole thing, and he was kind of going around being, like, making the case for other people why they should have been kicked out, pleading, even though the decision had already been made.
He tried to drag people down with him.
Yeah, and it was done. Big Daddy was out. Big Daddy was out.
Tried to go out like a martyr.
But then we stopped doing that.
That's a tough one to continue on after you leave university and guys start getting like families and stuff. And it's like,
moving away.
So I'm not going to play fantasy football this year now. Thanks, man.
It was. And it was harder to do. And we started getting only, you know, 6 to 10 at best, 6 to 8, mostly most seasons, usually people at the draft.
Exactly. Do you guys do auction too? You're
yeah, full? We do auction. I've said this a million times before, but I think if you do snake drafts, you're not a respectable person.
It's just faster.
No, it's not. Auction is faster. Auction is 100% faster. Oh, wow. This is the take of the uneducated. People sit there and they go, "Oh, auction takes so long." You go, "You're active in every pick. You're actually engaged in what is happening throughout the draft versus snake." Where if you're in a 12-person league, snake, and again, less than 12, you start to get into when people go, "Look at my team."
Yeah, the 18 league. Like, cool.
Yeah.
So you got Justin Jefferson and all stars.
Pro Bowlers on it, and you go, cool.
You have Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. Like, no, okay, it's just stupid. Relax.
Anyway, if you're in a 12 to 14-person league, 12 to 16-person league, I'm in a 16-person league, another one.
Snake draft.
I'm in
one?
Two leagues. Yeah, I hate it. But I do it because, again, it's just all my other friends. And I guess what? I don't pay attention every year. I don't care. I draft my team. It's PPR. It's weird. I hate it. My friend Doug runs it. So I go in, and it's a cheap league. Like, it's like a family league.
You're just there for the vibes.
Yeah, I'm just there for. I'm the forgets to set his lineup guy in that one because I just don't care.
You're the war criminal.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't even be in this league, but my friend loves it so much and he puts so much effort and he tries to do it with his family, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but he's the worst. Yeah. It's the worst league because he refuses to not do auction. I can't be invested in a non-auction league. You're just sitting there. You make your picks. There's nothing. It's not up to you. You're just waiting. Yeah. You're just waiting.
You could sit up for like 20
there,
minutes.
You're sitting there. You're waiting and you're waiting. There's 20 minutes of dead time. When you start to get later in the draft, it's the worst thing ever. Auction, even at the end of the draft, when nobody really has any money left, it's like a couple of dollars. Yeah. And people are trying to, you're basically trying to like put a player up for bid and you know nobody has the money to grab a sleeper. Auction is so much better.
Yeah.
I'm pleading with you, people. I know, anyway, you snake people are stuck in your ways. You're genuinely the stupidest people on earth.
Snake people.
Here's the thing. Snake people are so stupid, and this is the type of person that will never step out of their shell. You know, they'll never try something new. They'll never be adventurous. A snake person is just, you know, you sit at home every weekend and you watch Netflix and, you know, you cook the same meal and you never try anything new. You know,
you're drawing a lot of conclusions.
Your sex life is boring as hell.
Doing missionary. It's like, missionary.
Yeah,
every
you're
night.
just that's who you are, and that's fine. Some people are like that, but that's a snake person. They're afraid, and you're afraid to do any kind of math. You're like, how do I do the 4 + 5? That's too hard.
The snake is always funny at the end of the draft when no one knows any of the players, and it's like
seconds. It's stupid.
It's like, oh, they took Arian Foster.
I have never. here's a fact. Here's a fact. When we switched to auction. The very first year, every person in our league, because I had to convince people, I had to change some snakers, you know, I had to go
convert
into
the masses.
I had to stump and the snakers all at the end of the draft went, you were right. They bent the knee.
They lined up.
They bent the knee. Anyways, if you're a snake draft person,
jail,
congrats, vanilla, everything for you. Anyway. Next.
Joel Embiid. He removed Philadelphia from his Twitter location and also removed processing from his Twitter bio. It just has Yaounde, which is the capital of Cameroon, in there now. Do you draw anything from that?
Yeah,
people
of course.
Are obviously speculating. What's your first reaction to seeing that?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Him doing this as James Harden is in the middle of...
I love it.
...a tete-a-tete with Daryl Morey. Players usually side with players, by the way.
Yeah, PJ Tucker sided with Harden. On his Instagram story at 2 a.m.
Yeah, no, the Sixers situation is a complete tire fire.
Yeah, it's a soap opera.
Yeah, you don't do this during this time and think that it's going to go under the radar. This is you making a statement. It's so lame. It's unfortunately the state of the world that we live in.
Yeah.
This is the Tim Anderson, or, oh my God. This is the meme where it's, what have they done with this world? What have they done with this place? The Tim Robinson meme.
Oh.
I don't know why I said Tim Anderson, probably because I'm still used to the guy getting his block knocked off.
I was about to say, you said Tim Anderson. I was like,
what have
knocked
they
out?
Done with this place? What kind of world is this? That's the world we live in where
what
guys.
What have they done to us?
Yeah, guys change their Instagram handle or whatever. And it's like, ooh, this is the top story. It's so lame, but it's a thing. It's obviously a thing. He did it for a reason. The timing is conspicuous.
Yeah.
And it sucks. And I have no sympathy for Sixers fans because I hate them too. I don't care about them. I hope they lose forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to see Daryl Morey's organization burn down. So there. Next.
Sorry,
Joel Embiid's going to be a Knick. And
I was just about to ask.
I agree not with that thing. Like, Daryl Morey, ha, ha, ha. Like, nothing better could happen to a guy who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
Daryl Morey?
And now it's like, you're blowing up in your face. How did that go for you, man? I can't stand Daryl Morey either. I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, who cares? Next.
Last night, Willie Staley, who's a story editor for the New York Times, had a tweet that went viral, and he said, at the bar last night, the Zoomers were all paying with credit cards and closing out on every round. This is psycho behavior. Someone needs to teach these children how to go to the bar. And somebody added and said that, well, they were probably bar hopping, got to be ready to go out every time. And
up,
he said,
Defender.
It's empowering to carry a little cash around. They should know about stuff like this.
Wait, was the bartender, I thought you said he was complaining that they were already using cards.
No.
They were all using cards.
No, is that they weren't keeping tabs. They were just paying for every drink, closing out every round.
Yeah, for sure.
And then somebody replied to that and said, oh, but maybe they were bar hopping.
Yeah, but
be ready
who cares?
To go.
And, well, first of all, if they're saying that they're paying for every round, and, okay, this is stupid as hell. It's so true. This is a more of a modern day thing, and this is someone whose social life is turning very much into just dating. No woman wants to go to one bar. That's just a fact of the modern world we live in right now. And it used to be like you'd maybe go to a bar and a restaurant. Now you take a girl on a date. You've basically got to have three places lined up. It's a nightmare in the city. You got to go. These are the three cool places I'm going to take you every single time.
Mm-hmm. Every time I go in Toronto, I'm expecting I'm going to end up somewhere else before.
Yeah. Okay. So I get not, you know, but you can still run a tab. And I don't see why if you're just at an actual bar, not a restaurant, running a tab. If you're at a cocktail bar, you have to be running a tab. The psycho behavior settling up after every single cocktail you get. No question.
Yeah.
100% cocktail bar, run a tab. Classiest place, run a tab. If you're just walking up to a bar and you might only be there for a pint or two, you can settle up. But I am a big tab person. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty amateurish to be settling up after every drink if you think you're even going to be there for potentially two.
Right.
If you're going for one drink, buy the drink, settle up, get the hell out. If you change your mind, no big deal. If your average behavior is, I know I'm going out for drinks, but I pay for my beer every single time, I think that's pretty amateurish. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be upset about it to the point where I would tweet, but I also don't own a bar.
True.
Right? Yeah, I'm a big believer, too. Like, I'm now at the age where I hate splitting checks. Like, I really hate splitting checks. If it's a dinner, if, you know, you're going out for dinner with friends, I'm not paying for everybody's dinner.
Right.
But if you're going out with a friend or two friends, right, there's a tipping point. There's a tipping point with the group. There's a clear number of people that are there. Well, yeah, but I'm old now. I don't go and hang out with 12 people at a time anymore.
No, you're not old, JD.
That doesn't happen anymore. I don't have 12 friends I can call and be like, you want to have 12 people at the bar tonight? Like it used to, where I would show up at a bar and be like, wow, I know a bunch of most of the people in here. Wow. This is incredible.
Now, if you get a group of five together, you feel proud now.
Yeah. Oh, dude. If I can get five people together, and they're not my friend and their kids. Wow, I feel like a total G.
And it's
feel
not me like and Austin.
Entourage. I'm a big believer in you put a credit card down, you take the tab, and then the next person gets the next one. And if it's a little cheaper, a little bit more expensive, who cares?
That's what my friends
basically,
and I do.
Yeah. If you're starting to split the tab, if you go out with somebody, you know who's a criminal offender of this actually? McKee.
Oh, Sammy.
Yeah, McKee, I'm calling you out.
No,
McKee
Sammy.
Is the worst for it. Never picks up your beer. Never picks up your beer. Like, he's a split tab, separate check, all the way guy. Drives me insane. Only one of my friends that does it. Only one. Actually, that's not true. My friend Matt does it too.
I got two Matt buddies. And Sammy.
I know.
I got two buddies.
Yeah, I got two buddies that do the separate checks, and you're like, man, come on. This is a nightmare. This is just nuts. Our tabs are each, you know, $24. Let's just combine these suckers.
Just I get one, you get one.
Yep. Bingo. Yeah, you gotta put a credit card down. The more I'm thinking about this, the more it's just an obvious behavior. I cannot imagine a friend going up and then paying and up and then paying and up and then paying.
The only reason I do that is because the people I usually go out with, they're so unpredictable that I'm expecting to leave almost at any given second because that's often what happens. We end up going to like three or four different places.
It doesn't matter though. Then just go settle up when you have to leave. Like it doesn't change the math on anything. Yeah. Like the math ain't math in there for me. Like you just go up and you say, oh, my friends are leaving. I'm gonna grab my credit card. The only time you settle up every time is if you're at like a club, like you're at a massive bar where you're not running a tab and it's like so busy that you are just carrying some cash or you tap your credit card because you're just getting to the front. It's packed.
Well, that's often what I do.
That's what like I'm saying. That's... So if I, you know, for example, the last time I was paying for drinks at one time, I was at Grace O'Malley's and I went after.
My friend works there.
You go to Gracie still?
No, this was not still. I did this. That's what I'm saying. This is young person behavior. That
okay.
I was
doing.
This is
okay.
Young JD.
Like, I hope you haven't been at Gracie's in a long
JD.
Time, JD.
No, it was this summer, but.
Oh. You probably saw my friend then.
No, I went this summer, but that was because, yeah, I went and saw a show with some friends, and there was a group of us. There was like eight of us, and yeah, they play live music there, and I was like, yeah, it's down the street. It's not that far from here. Let's go. So we jumped in. We went to there. Didn't pay cover like a bad boy because I was walking with confidence. I was just like, I'm not paying cover. I'm 100
you
years
just
old.
Just out and
walk. I've passed all those 21-year-olds like, waiting in line. Yeah.
I've already paid all the covers I'm going to pay.
Pump faked all the underage kids going in there.
Like, I've already paid every
Euro
set of cover I'm
going in.
I went in, and then, yeah, a bar like that where it's super busy,
yeah.
You're paying every
single
time.
And you're struggling
time.
To get to the
yeah.
front.
Yeah. I went to a piano bar recently that was the same thing. If you're struggling to get to the front of the bar, you're clearly settling up every time because they're not taking taps. But I'm saying if you're sitting down, if you're going anywhere where you're sitting down, that's the difference. If you're at a bar where you have to stand, you're paying every time. If you're at a bar where you sit down, you put the bleeping card down.
Agree.
Okay?
Agree.
That's the rule. That's the golden rule.
Yes.
Anyway.
Agree.
And for God's sakes, if you're with a friend, pick
just
up.
Buy them a beer.
Don't be a Sammy.
Buy them a beer.
Yeah, don't be a Sam. Don't be a Sam. Anyway, let's wrap that up after I buried one of my best friends. Just shot, lined him up and just shot both my good buds right in the heart.
Sam's gonna unsubscribe from the show.
Down you go into the pit. Okay, so what are we doing tomorrow? Oh yeah, it's good hour
good
tomorrow.
Hour,
I'm wrapping
bananas.
Up the week
before he leaves.
Yeah, Ennis is going on vacation. I'm gonna do good hour with him, and then I'm off on Friday. My best bet hit yesterday, by the way. Crushed it. Wasn't even a sweat.
Under 7.5?
Destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Backed my boy Kikuchi. Bought that stock. Never looked back. Went to the moon. Richest man in baseball history. Because that was a penny stock and now it's worth $1 billion. Yeah, so we'll do that with Ennis. Then I'm off on Friday. Then I'm back for most of next week. There won't be a good hour next week. But I'll be with both of you guys. That's lovely. So yeah, subscribe to the podcast.
Simon too, back next week.
Subscribe to the podcast, share it with your friends, follow me on Twitter and Instagram, and then hit me up if you ever want to play on Botano Best Bets. Talk to you more.